All right, we got a 49ers update. Bonus practice today. You might have guessed, no Devondre Campbell spotted at bonus practice. Matt Barrows has the rundown for us today. I'm on assignment. Nick Bosa, Jair Brown were participating in the very short bonus practice. So Bosa came out of the game fine. Jair Brown also now back for the 49ers. Malik Mustafa was in full uniform working on the side, and I think he's a guy that the 49ers might really be building around in the future. He looked like a missile this year. Missed the game against the Rams. So to have Malik Mustafa in full uniform working on the side with a chance to play this next weekend against the Miami Dolphins is important as the 49ers really start to focus on springboarding into the 25 offseason. And guys like Malik Mustafa, who showed some really nice stuff on tape in 2024, are going to be central to their plans moving forward. Jalen Moore was working on the side. Kyle Shanahan didn't speak today, so we're not sure what his injury is. Trent Williams was not there, so if Jalen Moore and Trent Williams are both unavailable against the Miami Dolphins, the 49ers are going to have to dig deeper into tackle depth. They added Sebastian Gutierrez to the 53-man roster not long ago. And Isaac Guerrero with his foot sprain didn't stop him from playing, but it made him work on the side during practice today. No Williams at practice, no Greenlaw at practice. I don't think that's all too surprising. Dre was really sore coming out of the game. We'll see if he's ready to go by Sunday against the Dolphins. And obviously, no Devondre Campbell. So taking a look at this from a roster perspective, just to get you all caught up on where the 49ers are, we'll put in the injury shadings right now, the ones that aren't there yet. But actually, I already have this set up for next season. So I'm only going to put in an injury shading if it's a really, really pressing thing. We used to, during the regular season, when the 49ers are in firm contention, we keep track of injuries with the pink shading. Right now, though, we're looking at guys who are already under contract. So I've switched the color scheme to green. Exclusive rights free agents are in blue, and restrictive free agents are in this orange color. But anyway, if we go through this and say, hey, Jalen Moore, what's wrong with him? Because he was working off on the side today. We know that Trent Williams also wasn't at practice, so that's the first two options. That left tackle are unavailable. The only other tackle on this roster is Sebastian Gutierrez. So assuming, and this is just for assumption's sake, that neither Williams nor Moore is ready to go, then Sebastian Gutierrez would be the 49ers' man at left tackle. Looking elsewhere, obviously no Devondre Campbell. He is suspended for the final three games of this season. We're going to be removing him from the roster given this suspension. So the 49ers, by Wednesday, they're going to make a move to replace Devondre Campbell. We're going to make a suspension list down here, and we're going to put Devondre Campbell on it because he's technically still part of the football team, but he is now suspended. His name doesn't really fit in that box, so maybe we can make it a little bit wider. So removing Campbell from the roster means the 49ers now have 52 of 53 spots filled. We'll see if there's a practice squad call-up coming this week, or we'll see what the 49ers do in that situation. Only other one here is Dre Greenlaw. So he's not under contract for next season. He's still playing for a deal. And I think that his return was so impressive for the 49ers that he might have locked up that decision for San Francisco. But he did come out of the game sore, did come out of the game with a little knee irritation. That's why he wasn't playing in the second half, and that led to all the Devondre Campbell drama. So we'll keep our eye on Dre as he attempts to bounce back. You know, it's tough. You play these NFL games, and it's like a bunch of mini car accidents out on the field. Guys that range from 220 to over 300 pounds colliding, running full speed, that will leave some bruises. And especially if you haven't played in a long time, it was 305 days for Dre Greenlaw. I mean, he was doing the old man walk after the game, walking from the press conference to the locker room. I was walking by him, and he was inching along over there. But the 49ers reported no injury there. They just reported some of that soreness, and they were actually really happy with how he physically was able to come out of the game. I still think that it is an amazing feat that Dre Greenlaw was able to return 305 days after tearing his Achilles. And it looked like he returned at the same speed as he was before. Do you remember the first couple possessions of the Super Bowl? Dre Greenlaw was the best player on the field. He was flying around. I mean, the 49ers were playing inspired football to be in the Super Bowl. Dre was never one that was called out for a lack of effort, but there was a player that was called out for a lack of effort in the NFC Championship game, namely Chase Young. I think the entire 49ers defense took that personally, and they showed up dominating early in that Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Chiefs really hadn't done anything against San Francisco up until the point that Dre Greenlaw tore his Achilles running out onto the field. I'm probably depressing some of you by bringing back some of this 49ers Super Bowl season stuff. There was something else that came out today from Aaron Schatz. He does a great job over on, well, it used to be Football Outsiders. Now it's the FTN network, but he has the defense adjusted value over average through week 14 because Baltimore's offense has been really, really good this season in DVOA, 34.4% above league average. You could see they rank amongst the top seasons ever recorded through this point last year. This is just a reminder that the 2023 49ers were a historically good offense. 36.9% DVOA. They were behind only two Tom Brady New England Patriots teams, including the very famous 2007 New England Patriots, through this point of the season. So in case anybody goes and tries to tell you that Brock Purdy doesn't have a high ceiling, this is the ceiling of Brock Purdy. He was able to take the 49ers offense to historic heights. And before you spout off any nonsense about, well, his team, yes, I get it, his team. It's a team sport and he's the quarterback. You only go as high as the quarterback and you only go as high as the team. You need both. Now, in a year where everything seemingly has gone wrong for the 49ers, we can also measure some of Brock Purdy's performance. And this expands on what I was saying yesterday. Kevin Cole makes these great charts. PFF offensive grade is on the x-axis and EPA per play is on the y-axis. A lot of people who will shout, oh, EPA per play, that's a team stat. Well, again, everything's a team stat. It's a team sport. But if it's a stat that isn't relevant at all to quarterback play, why is it so correlated with PFF offensive grade for QBs? QBs have an outsized impact on what's happening. And the key this season, even with everything going wrong for Brock Purdy, was to remain in the upper right of graphs like this. Last year, he was in the Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson spot. He was up here. Things were cooking for Brock Purdy the way that they are for Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Those are two great offenses. This season, the 49ers just don't have the same supporting cast. But to be up in this corner where Allen and Jackson are, you have to have a healthy supporting cast. The play caller has to be having a good year. Everything has to fall in place. For the 49ers, it absolutely did fall in place last year. You see it on the EPA, on the DVOA chart there. They're behind only the New England Patriots at this time in historical efficiency. This season, well, so much has gone wrong. Brock Purdy, though, is still in the upper right. He's still in a spot on this graph where it's a coveted spot. There are a couple quarterbacks who are undisputably better. They're further to the right and further up, both of them. But Purdy is still ahead of the vast majority of the NFL pack, including guys who are already making a ton of money. So as you can see, the market is the market, and the market will be the market for Brock Purdy. It's not that complicated in this situation. That was one of my quarterback thoughts. I've got another one here, and this tweet has gotten some traction, including from people that are important in this process. We'll just leave it at that. But imagine how astounded some people will be when the 49ers sign Brock Purdy to a deal that's simultaneously massive and team-friendly. The problem is that most people that are opining on this do not understand the dynamics of the quarterback market and paying players and the salary cap and also the value of the quarterback position in general. But the goal of every contract negotiation is to hit a win-win. Win for the player, win for the team. If the team wins, the player is also more likely to compound his winnings down the road because you can build a strong roster around him. It is eminently possible for the 49ers to pay Brock Purdy top of the market money, whatever that means, because people are tossing around APY as if they think that has any substantive value, but it doesn't. But they can pay him top of the market money, and that can be measured in other ways, and it should be measured in other ways, like fully guaranteed money, while also signing a team-friendly deal. You can do both. The 49ers have set themselves up for both. This can be a win-win, and if this is executed properly by Purdy's side, that's Kyle Strongin, his agent, and the 49ers side, that's Parag Marathe, John Lynch, everybody that's going to be negotiating on the San Francisco side. If this is executed correctly, the 49ers will strike the win-win. That's what it's all about. You are trying to strike the win-win. Now, we're still a little premature on this. Purdy's not even eligible for the new contract yet, but it is the flavor of the moment. It's what everybody seems to want to talk about. And we've got about 3 or 4 weeks before this can actually happen. And it's going to be interesting to me to see if this happens on the earlier end of this time. Remember, D'Amato Lenore happened on the earlier end. The market was the market for D'Amato Lenore. I think that they found a good sweet spot there. And to be honest, there aren't any other comp quarterbacks that are scheduled to go before Brock Purdy. You saw the most recent one was Dak Prescott right at the start of the regular season. If we want to simplistically talk about APY, that was $60 million per year. But in the case of Dak Prescott, he's not even on the top five of this. These are fully guaranteed money rankings in the NFL. You should familiarize yourself with these five names and these numbers. Deshaun Watson, maybe you don't need that because nobody's going to surpass that anytime soon. But Burrow, Lawrence, Jackson, and Herbert, the fully guaranteed money in those contracts is a whole heck of a lot more important than any APY number ever will be. And it's likely that we're going to see Brock Purdy on a scale relative to some of the names that we see here. Because if you do that, then you can start amortizing the deal with great effectiveness. You can keep Brock Purdy's, you know, I predict that his 2025 cap hit's going to be less than $10 million, even with a record-setting new deal. If it'll be record-setting in some way. We'll see how exactly. I don't know if it's going to be the fully guaranteed money, the total guaranteed money, the APY. Nobody's sure how exactly they're going to negotiate this. But what they're going to try to do is find something that works for both sides. And I think that that will involve a lot of money, A, and B, a salary cap hit in 2025 of under $10 million. I think the 49ers will be able to accomplish that. That or maybe even a little bit above $10 million. It depends on how big the initial signing bonus is because you're going to prorate that over 5 years. So take that initial signing bonus, divide it by five, and then add the veteran minimum base salary for 2025 for Brock Purdy, which is just going to be about $1 million. And boom, you're going to have your 2025 cap hit. They can really, really shoulder a lot of the load of this deal much later in the contract. And that's how the 49ers are going to stay cap sustainable. That's how they're going to continue to roster a very, very good quarterback for the indefinite future. There you have Purdy this year. Purdy last year was way up there. The range from good, like best year for Brock Purdy to worst year for Brock Purdy is pretty damn impressive. The range goes from my cursor up here, that's where he was in the Josh Allen spot, to down here. So he is just living in this area of the chart. You're going to pay good money for a quarterback that lives in this area of the chart. What we should do is talk about how much the 49ers have struggled as an offense this year, stylistically, in ways that they didn't struggle last year. Brock Purdy may have the hardest job of any quarterback in football this season. If you guys want me to make a dedicated video on this, give me a thumbs up in the comment section. But the 49ers average the least separation at the time of catch or at the time of incompletion out of any team in the NFL. The very, very least. I mean, it is ugly. They were number 11 last season, and they are down at number 32 this year. An average of 3 yards of separation. And I made a little chart. I'm going to prepare this to show on a show. I plot it offensive efficiency on one of the axes and the separation number on other axes. 49ers obviously last in separation. They're like 11th in offensive efficiency. Every single top five offense this year is above average in the average separation number. You can't be a top five offense without generating decent separation. The 49ers rank dead last Yet, despite the dead last ranking, they've somehow managed to scrap and claw their way to the number 11 offensive efficiency. It was higher before the disastrous performance against the LA Rams. So that tells you something about what Brock Purdy is having to deal with and what he has been able to accomplish this year. He's throwing to extremely tight windows. He's throwing to receivers who aren't separating or separating at the lowest level of the league. And he's also dealing, I think, in large part to schematic issues with the 49ers, with the lowest yards after the catch benefit in the NFL, after previously the 49ers were dealing with the best yak benefit in the NFL. The stat that I always pointed to was the fact that San Francisco had run the fewest screen passes in the league entering the snow game at Buffalo. They've started running a few more screens lately. I don't think that they've run enough, and obviously they haven't been as effective as the 49ers need them to be. But somebody like Patrick Mahomes has been working with points put on a platter by Andy Reid. Even Josh Allen, I think, is getting great, great play calling from the Buffalo Bills. And a lot of that is because he's got guys that are healthy. 49ers really suffering. No Brandon Ayuk in the lineup means that everybody has to bump up a position. Juwan Jennings has to play the X receiver spot instead of Ayuk, you know, an elite athlete in that X spot. Now you've got that pressure on Jennings, who's done a really good job. But you're a lot better if Ayuk is on the field, drawing defensive attention, generating separation, and Jennings is a side weapon to that. Deebo Samuel's a lot better in that situation as well, right? Deebo Samuel playing the Z with Ayuk drawing attention and Christian McCaffrey pulling defenders, gravitational pull. Everybody looks better. That's how you reach the point of elite, record-setting, historic offense, which is where the 49ers were in 2023. They had all those tools. Brock Purdy was able to distribute to those tools. That is the job of the quarterback position. He worked off schedule to give the 49ers superstars even more chances. They simply have not had that this season. You go back and you look at a game against the Kansas City Chiefs when four of the 49ers' top five eligibles were unavailable to finish that game. It was after Brandon Ayuk tore his ACL and Deebo Samuel had pneumonia. He would have to check into the hospital the night of that game. I mean, everybody was getting hurt. Juwan Jennings was out after hurting his hip the week before. Christian McCaffrey wasn't back yet. That was four of the top five eligibles out. All the 49ers had was George Kittle. It's all that Brock Purdy had to work with in that game. I guarantee you that even Patrick Mahomes would have a bad game in such circumstances. Even Josh Allen would have a bad game in such circumstances. So you really have to contextualize all this, and that's why we look at the QBR. That's why we look at the charts like the one that I showed you. We can put it back up on the screen here. This is Kevin Cole's chart. Did such a great job. That's why we look at performance ceiling. It's where Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson are, and performance floor for Brock Purdy. And we look at the range and we see quarterbacks worse than Purdy with a more healthy supporting cast this year, making a lot more money. That's why the quarterback market is the quarterback market. And if you just use logic, then you can see where this is going to go. You might not see the precise numbers, but you could see the general direction and where it's going to go. And from there, the 49ers have to build the strongest roster possible. Talk more about the 49ers. You know, I think almost every update at this point of the season, I should lace with a look forward into the future, because the 49ers are going to start making a lot of future-facing moves. In fact, the day that the regular season ends, the very next day, we can expect a lot of these practice squad guys to sign reserve future deals to stick around the building on the 90-man roster. But they already have quite a few players shaded in green here, which means that they are on the roster for next season. They're under contract for next season. The big questions for me on this roster for San Francisco are running back. Are they going to tender Jordan Mason, and is he going to sign that tender to come back? Because the top of the room between Isaac Guerrero and Christian McCaffrey is going to be very impressive and perhaps better fitting for what the 49ers are trying to do with Brock Purdy than something with Jordan Mason. It might cost $5, $6 million to retain somebody like Jordan Mason, even if he isn't necessarily the best fit for the 49ers at that position. I look at receiver and I wonder about the future of Deebo Samuel. And then I think about these last three games. Everybody is auditioning for the 49ers in these final three games. They're playing against Mike McDaniel and the Miami Dolphins, and that team just suffered a gut-punching loss to the Houston Texans as they were trying to climb out of a slow start. So a lot of pride is going to be on the line maybe not a lot of playoff implications, but a lot of pride is going to be on the line at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, where, by the way, the 49ers have played three Super Bowls in that building, including their most recent Super Bowl victory and their first Super Bowl loss against the Chiefs. But the 88 season, 89 Super Bowl, that was when Joe Montana saw John Candy in the stands before leading the 88-yard touchdown drive. Featured some big, big Jerry Rice contributions and a John Taylor touchdown catch. They beat the Bengals 20-16. Then there was the it was the 1995 year, 1994 Super Bowl. Steve Young threw six touchdown passes, 49-26, Super Bowl 29 over the Chargers. We're coming up on the 30th anniversary of that, the 30th anniversary of the last time the 49ers won the Super Bowl. And then, of course, there was Super Bowl 54. February 4th, I believe, 2020. That was the 2019 season. It was before the world basically stopped a couple weeks after that. But the 49ers and their fans also stopped about 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. That was a brutal, brutal loss against Kansas City. And that was the most recent time that the 49ers have actually played in that building against the Dolphins. Anyway, they're going to be there on Sunday, and I'm really, really interested to see guys like Deebo Samuel auditioning for 2025. If Samuel is not back, but especially if Brandon Ayuk is not 100% for the start of the 2025 season, Ricky Pearsall and Jacob Cowing better have made significant strides over the offseason for the 49ers to be able to smoothly start the 2025 season. And there's a solid chance that Brandon Ayuk won't be fully ready at the start of that year. But I think that given the fact the 49ers rank last in the league in separation this year, people can understand why Brandon Ayuk was so damn valuable to them last season and why it was so disappointing that he went through that hold-in and he looked at the contract that he eventually signed and he just sat there and stared at it for three weeks, missed training camp, didn't seem all too prepared when he started playing, and then he tore his ACL. That was, you know, you look back at what went wrong for the 49ers this season. That might have been at the genesis of it. That might have been at the very root of all the things that went wrong. You could talk about the downstream effect and the way that the dominoes all fell. Well, that was a first very, very damaging blow for the 49ers, the fact that they didn't have the same Brandon Ayuk that they did in 2023. So the hope is to get that version of Brandon Ayuk back at some point in 2025. Will it be at the very start of 25? Is that even possible? I'm not sure. So that's why Ricky Pearsall and Jacob Cowing are two big names of interest. I still think the 49ers will be on the market for a very good tight end too. They tried to get one through Brock Wright last year, but Detroit wasn't having it. And I really think that this interior part of the line with Aaron Banks and Jake Brendel, I'm going to even zoom in on that. That's what the 49ers have to fix next up front. As you can see, the right side of the offensive line will remain under contract for next season. It's the left side that really languished this year, a season after the right side was the weakness of the 49ers line. Pooney made that a whole lot better. McKivitz improved this year. But it was Aaron Banks who really saw a slide in play alongside Jake Brendel. Does Ben Bartsch, who's now on IR, get a chance for the 49ers? Does Spencer Burford get that left guard chance for San Francisco? And do they sign a center to elevate this entire line in the kind of fashion that Kyle Shanahan has done with Weston Richburg and Alex Mack in the past? Defensive line for San Francisco, a lot of dudes under contract. It's the secondary where they're going to have to make a lot of re-signing. So I wonder about Greenlaw at the linebacker level, and I wonder about Talanoa Hufanga at the safety level. If the 49ers can fit both of them in their price structure for next season, they've got a good opening starting line of defensive players. So that starts now. I mean, today they had a bonus practice. That's all great. But these games, Miami, the Detroit Lions, Aleem McNeil is now hurt and done for the season. That's a total mess in Detroit. I think David Montgomery, who was Brock Purdy's first running back at Iowa State in college as an MCL, he might be done for 6 weeks, which it's already December 16th. So they would maybe even have to make the Super Bowl for Montgomery to come back. I mean, the Lions are sliding. They're no longer one of the top tier teams in the league because of all these defensive injuries. And now David Montgomery too. I think it's the Bills. I think it's the Eagles. That's my Super Bowl prediction at the moment. I reserve the right to change it based on how things evolve. But anyway, the 49ers get to play the Detroit Lions. Then they play the Cardinals. And they want to generate as much good buzz as possible entering this offseason. They've already benefited in the past from doing so at the end of prior years. 2017 was a great example. By 2019, they're in the Super Bowl, but they really were able to make the most out of those few games in the stretch run. This is about developing younger players, allowing older players to get back into the groove of things after so many missed time with injuries. And it's about building momentum in the building for the offseason. That's why they took this Devondre Campbell thing so seriously and why he's going to be out over $800,000, at least according to all my calculations, if everything goes as poorly as possible for Devondre Campbell. And it really seems like the 49ers are making it their life's mission to ensure that that becomes a reality. But they were incensed by the Devondre Campbell situation because this is a franchise that not only looks at this season, but they also, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, when they first took the job, they said they wanted to build a perennial winner. They wanted to build a team that competed year in and year out. And when you have something that threatens the culture of the team, like Devondre Campbell refusing to play and walking out the way that he did, you start to think about, okay, what happens in 2025? Are we going to face more of these roadblocks then? Are more thorns then? Are guys going to start to think that this type of behavior is okay? And the 49ers said no. John Lynch took the elevator down from his box to confront Campbell on the field. And then John Lynch kicked Campbell off the field. And now John Lynch and the 49ers brass is making sure Campbell's going to be out more than $800,000 for what he did. And you heard George Kittle and Charvarius Ward talk. This is serious business for San Francisco. They're trying to maintain culture. And I think they've successfully done that in this particular instance so that they can field a roster that's as healthy as possible in 2025 with the requisite improvements. And I talk about the interior line. I talk about tight end. I talk about the signings they need to make in the secondary. Make sure you're shored up at safety with the requisite improvements to make a true run for this in 2025. And guess where the Super Bowl is at the end of next season? That's right. Super Bowl 60 is at Levi's Stadium. The 49ers are hosting the Super Bowl. I get that it might be frustrating for people to watch how poorly the Seattle Seahawks played last night. And you look at the records of the Rams and you look at the records of the Cardinals and you say, oh my goodness, this division isn't any good. If the 49ers had just not blown one of the earlier games to the division bottom feeders, and now they're the bottom feeders, but earlier the other teams were the bottom feeders. If the 49ers had just held serve in those earlier games, they'd probably be in line to make the playoffs. And I get it, but there are also some areas of serious needed introspection for the 49ers. I think that Kyle Shanahan needs to be better in the chess match. I think that this was an off year for Kyle Shanahan. We saw it in the yak yardage and the screen yardage. We see it in some of the separation numbers, although that's a personnel-dependent thing as well. But I think part of it has been the play calling for the 49ers. I don't think that he has had his very top high-velocity fastball throughout this season. I think the 49ers absolutely need to get better on run defense. That's an area that's eroded again this season, and it's something they need to look long and hard in the mirror philosophically. How are they going to get back to where the team was in 2022 and before that? I think they need to look long and hard at first down efficiency, which goes back to play calling, but also the run game and also the interior pass protection between left guard and center especially. How are they going to do that? I think they need to look long and hard at how the receiving room is going to be constructed. We know that Debo Samuel is a player that people talk about a lot, and we know that he's severely disappointed this season. So how the 49ers going to handle all that? All of these things, you know, really, really will require hard looks in the mirror from the 49ers. And had they somehow squeaked into the playoffs this year through a very flawed NFC West, there would have been the danger of them not really taking the long, hard looks that they need to. They might have needed this big slap in the face where everything seemingly has gone wrong, and that introspection may now happen in an expedited fashion. On top of that, I think the 49ers have really, really needed some rest. I think that the Christian McCaffrey saga shows you more clearly than any other data point the need for this team to rest. 60 games in three seasons entering this one. McCaffrey worn down by the Achilles tendonitis. Works his way back. All credit to him. Obviously working a whole lot harder than Devondre Campbell to be there for his teammates. Works his way back. Looks like he's in his prime version. against the Buffalo Bills and then suffers a completely unrelated knee injury, slams his knee into the turf on a shoestring tackle. A play that was a shoestring away from being a touchdown turns into the PCL strain for Christian McCaffrey, probably ends his season. I think guys like that can use the full January, can use the February to rest and get back and be fresh, ready to mentally attack the 2025 season. That's where the 49ers are as a franchise right now. I know that I took a practice update and I made it a whole lot more broad, but I think that's the healthy way of looking at things for the 49ers. That's how they have to approach these final three games. Why don't you guys toss in a couple questions? We'll go 49ers Q&A. Looks like we got a big show out here. I think I want to go get some water very briefly before I start asking these questions. Look at Niner Faithful. Purdy playing like crap this season. No, Purdy is not playing like crap this season. Your expectations, you're spoiled. You don't know how to evaluate quarterback play. You're shown to be very clueless in your analysis here. And B, you're sounding entitled and spoiled. This is where all the quarterbacks in the league are. These are guys playing like crap. Will Levis, Deshaun Watson, Anthony Richardson, Gardner Minshew, Cooper Rush, Caleb Williams, Dak Prescott, one good before he got hurt, Daniel Jones, Jameis Winston. I mean, these are the guys playing like crap. These are the guys playing very top efficiency football. And this is a group of guys that's playing well. Purdy's at the top of the pack of the guys playing well. Your feelings are irrelevant here. Your feelings do not matter. The facts are what matter. This is how Purdy is performing. Every single quarterback is going to have bad games, bad throws, and every single quarterback's dealing with something different, and Brock Purdy just happens to be dealing with probably the hardest situation in the league this year, given all the injuries and given the lowest separation windows of any team. I am using my eyes. I am. I know how to watch tape. I don't think that you do. If somebody's saying use your eyes and watch the quarterback position. Oh, we got water. Thank you. I'm using my eyes. I see well. I know how to evaluate the position. I think the 49ers know how to evaluate the position. I would trust John Lynch. I would trust Kyle Shanahan a whole lot more to evaluate the quarterback position than somebody named Stash on YouTube. Two bad games a career does not make. Yes. Now, here's a wise comment. Here's Brock Purdy throughout the course of his career. Green is good. Red is bad. There's a lot of green here. People are zooming in on this, a game in the snow and a game in the rain, and not seeing this. And it really isn't that complicated. You know what other game was a wet rain game? It was one of Brock Purdy's best career games against Seattle in the wild card game. So it's not like he's incompetent in wet weather. I do think it hurts every quarterback. It also hurt Matthew Stafford the other day. But the bottom line is that we see a quarterback that's been way, way above average. In fact, number one in the league ever since he joined the league in efficiency. And anybody who's watched a shred of film and knows what they're watching will say that they're watching a really good quarterback. No, the 49ers not going to tank. Tanking doesn't happen. This is a competitive sport. You know who tanked and who lost out on over $800,000 in all likelihood because of it? Somebody named Devondre Campbell. That is not acceptable. It's especially unacceptable in the 49ers locker room. The culture of this team is to fight and to, I mean, they like guys who passionately enjoy the game of football. They want contagious competitiveness. Somebody refusing to play is the opposite of that. A team tanking would be the opposite of that. Culture comes before everything. So that's what the 49ers are going to be focusing on. Tanking is a dumb idea because even the most highly rated draft prospect of all time has not been a sure thing. And even if there was a slam dunk, there's no way the 49ers are getting to number one. Here's a good point. Lamar Jackson had 16 touchdowns and 13 interceptions in year three and still got an extension. Yeah, Lamar Jackson, I remember that. That was the ugly Lamar Jackson season. we can even look at the efficiency numbers from that year, and I guarantee you they won't be anywhere near where Brock Purdy's have been this season. People just need to let go of the draftism and evaluate quarterbacks objectively. Stop going with your feelings and actually go with facts. And you'll see where Purdy is, even at his lowest, which has been this season for the 49ers. How soon do I think the 49ers execute Purdy's contract? Well, both sides have to agree, right? So it takes two to tango in this situation. So I'm really not sure. I think that people would prefer to have this done sooner rather than later, but if terms aren't acceptable, if somebody's getting screwed in the deal, then there's going to have to be some negotiation, and negotiation does take time. But they can start this, like they can officially sign this after the regular season ends. Let Parag cook. Well, this is my main thing, and this is not just Parag. This is Kyle Strongin, who's Brock Purdy's agent. Imagine how astounded some people will be when the 49ers sign Brock Purdy to a deal that's simultaneously massive and team-friendly. They can do both at once, and I do predict that both will happen at once. Mark is right. I don't think the 49ers want another drawn-out contract negotiation, especially since this is the quarterback position. And this is the centerpiece of the team. That's just the way that it works in football. The Brandon Ayuk situation really hurt the 49ers this year. We said it at the time. It was getting really tiresome even for people on the outside. Imagine how tough that was in the building for the 49ers. The drama, the inability to actually practice what you're going to install over the course of the season, right? I mean, it was torturous. And then we found out that Brandon Ayuk was sitting on the same contract that he signed for 3 weeks. So if there's anything that you should be upset about over the course of this season, something that could have changed, something that, you know, wasn't set in stone, that it took actions to reach that point from Brandon Ayuk, you could look back at that. You could look back at the hold-in throughout the month of August. Then he finally signed. He got back in there. He didn't look like a player who was at training camp, because he hadn't been at training camp or he hadn't been practicing at training camp, and then he got hurt against the Kansas City Chiefs. So more than anything, there needs to be a lot of scrutiny and a lot of focus on Brandon Ayuk, because the 49ers needs to be an elite player from the very first snap that he's available to go. If the 49ers are going to recoup their investment on that contract, and if they're going to get back to the type of ease that their offense operated with prior to the 2024 season. Christopher Lockwood thinks that Purdy is going to have his best year next year. Well, you might as well pay up now then, because imagine if Brock Purdy has his best year and the 49ers win the Super Bowl at Levi's, and he does that, and he does it in good nature, and he says, okay, fine, I don't need the contract this year, I'll wait, I'll play on the rookie deal, which, by the way, not going to happen. But imagine if he did that, then imagine how much money this would cost the 49ers come 2025. So, I mean, just... you have to think of this in terms of how the league actually works. Fans have these fantasies, and a lot of their fantasies are about taking other people's money, which is crazy. You know, if you were up for a new job and somebody, you know, offered a certain amount of money, but everybody else doing that job at around the same ability or even doing worse than you, suddenly, you know, was going to be paid 20 or 30% more, like, you would think it's unfair. Like, that's just how it works. So people that are saying, oh, hey, Brock Purdy should just help out the 49ers by taking 30% less money than what the market will dictate, because the market is the market, those people are, A, unrealistic, but B, I think that, you know, they're also stepping into business that they shouldn't be stepping into. Like, it's just not appropriate. So it's a good thing that people online don't really matter in this situation. It's going to come down to what the market is, and that's going to be how things turn out in this contract negotiation. All right, let's toss in some questions here. I'm looking through some of them right now. I got to put the 49ers Q&A banner back up. Due at signing is, well, the signing bonus is part of what's due at signing. Guaranteed at signing is typically the term that is used. Due at signing means signing bonus, guaranteed money in base salary, so whatever is fully guaranteed in that way, then sometimes a guaranteed option bonus down the road. That's what's guaranteed at signing, and due at signing would be whatever you have to pay him immediately, which would probably be the signing bonus. He could absolutely do a Mahomes-type contract, less and longer. Mahomes is in the 40s if you want to look at APY, but he can restructure that deal. Yes, it has given the Chiefs more salary cap flexibility. I think, you know, it's obviously possible for Brock Purdy. I don't know exactly how they're going to thread this needle, but I do know that I expect this. I expect that they're going to have a massive deal that is also team friendly. And that also means that Brock Purdy will have a chance to compound his winnings down the road. That's all I can say. And something they could sign something for $60 to $65 million per year in APY that's team friendly. That I think a lot of people can't really put their heads around that. But you have to realize that these deals, it's the structure that ends up determining the deal, not the APY. You're looking at things in the complete wrong order if you're using APY to judge the deal. APY is an ending average. It is the total amount of money, guaranteed and non-guaranteed, divided by the amount of years of the deal. It tells you virtually nothing about the contract structure because a lot of the money that makes up the APY can be non-guaranteed. So APY is rudimentary. APY is fun for bar chatter. It's fun for people to seem like they know what they're talking about on Twitter, but it's also a signal that they don't know what they're talking about. Fully guaranteed money is the starting point. Then the more complex structure of things, that's where you could really get into the nitty gritty. I discussed Jalen Hurts's contract yesterday. If you guys want a comparison here, Hurts, this is several years. Look at the proration of the signing bonus and the guaranteed option bonuses. This is the first, I think, triple option bonus contract in NFL history. The 49ers have now run triple and even quadruple bonuses. This might have been a quadruple, actually, looking at some of the numbers here. So Jalen Hurts had three option bonuses and one signing bonus, and all of these are stretched out across multiple years to the point where the cap hit is under $10 million for the first year, about $13.5 million for the second year. It doesn't get up to anything like really, really huge until way down here, 2027. That's because most of the money has been pushed back to a void year, $97.5 million in a void year. And if the cap is growing year after year, you can afford to do this. So even a deal that's at $65 million, if you can structure it appropriately, you can keep the cap number low in the first 3 or 4 years, low enough with the salary cap rising. Cash-rich teams are in a really, really good position with a salary cap in the NFL. I've covered this extensively over the years, and I expect the 49ers to operate in more of the same way regarding Brock Purdy moving forward. So Mark says, you can confidently say that rain is Brock Purdy's kryptonite. Okay, well, Matthew Stafford was on the other side, and he was bad as well in the rain the other day. So is there a quarterback in the NFL not named Josh Allen who can just plow through weather with no problem? I don't think so. And I think even Allen in a downpour would probably struggle. I think snow might be actually a little bit easier. Also, if you think that Purdy's been roundly bad in rain, how about this game? This game was a wet game against Seattle in the playoffs. It's one of his best career games, 0.72 EPA per play. Has there been a better one? Yeah, Philadelphia, 0.73 last year. 1.06, wow, against the Arizona Cardinals. That was a hell of a game as well. I will also say that Purdy played against the Green Bay Packers in rain last year. And this was a playoff game, and he was in the positive, and he led a comeback to win. So he hadn't done all that poorly for somebody who you say is completely incompetent in the rain, considering the fact that every single quarterback to play the game has been worse in the rain than in dry weather. And yes, there is only one Josh Allen. I think Josh Allen, if I were a fan, Josh Allen would be my favorite player. I've talked about that a lot. And it's, you know, a lot of it's because I'm biased coming from the San Joaquin Valley, and he's from there too. But the way that he has combined his physical prowess with being able to execute the nuances of the game, that's really come along over the few years. He wasn't able to hit the broadside of a barn over his first 2 years in the league. Then he got more accurate, and now he's pulling the strings so deftly at the quarterback position. He's doing the small things. It's so impressive for me to watch Josh Allen deliver. I mean, it's been so fun to watch his development over the years. Keith says that Josh Allen is his favorite quarterback as well. J49 says, block for Purdy and he will produce. And I think that the offensive line has been something the 49ers have tried to improve ever since last season with Dominic Pooney. But I think center and left guard took steps back this year. And that's just the gist of it. That's the 49ers need to improve those positions. Pressure up the gut can be extremely, extremely damaging. It almost always is something that can derail an offense. This show is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find comfort this December with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/LombardiLounge today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/LombardiLounge. Got another one of these super chats. This one's kind of funny. Serious question, David. Anytime somebody puts serious question, you immediately know that it's not a serious question, but we're going to read it. When the team pays Brock and he can't deliver, what will you say? Please answer. Let's put it this way. When the 49ers do pay Brock Purdy and he does deliver, you will be nowhere to be seen on the internet. I'll still be here objectively analyzing the 49ers. So don't put out a hypothetical that you will not back up when that hypothetical is completely unfair to the actual factual data that has preceded it. This is the data that's preceded it. If we're going to be objective, this is the data that's preceded. This is Brock Purdy's track record. You use the track record to look at the future because the track record is going to give you a hint at how the future is going to be. So anyone saying that Brock Purdy is going to fall off of a cliff is just operating in fantasy and they're not operating in reality. They're putting their feelings before facts. So keep that same energy when things don't go your way, because I'm pretty sure that you're just trolling and you'll disappear as soon as your takes are proven to be incorrect. I'm going to be here the whole time. I have been here the whole time, and I adapt and I watch and I take the unpredictable nature of the NFL and I try to process it all for you guys. But to act like you know what's going to happen when it flies in the face of all data is ridiculous. And I think that really sums up a lot of what Brock Purdy is dealing with. It's people operating on feelings, people not knowing what they're talking about, and then just trying to profess as if it is some sort of indisputable fact, yet they're completely wrong. All right, everybody, thanks for watching. We will talk to you very soon.